It's dedicated by Mark Chipkin. So this year is sponsored by Mark, in loving memory of Adam Rabinovich Zal on his 11th year at Saint, which is on the 5th of Tishrei. Okay. So I'll say it one more time. As far as I know, I'm not going to say anything about the Parsha. If I do, then it'll be completely incidental and accidental, unplanned and unwanted. What I wanted to do is something which is, as I said, more appropriate for Shabbat Shuvah. So let's begin with a custom. Shulchan Aruch and Tafresh Yud writes, Nogim b'kol makom l'arbot neirot b'batei knesiot, u'latzi b'gadim na'im b'beit ha'knesset. So one of the customs is to put more candles. Now, more candles could simply be functional because we want there to be more light. We don't want there to be darkness. On the other hand, there may be another reason for it, as one will sense when we move over to the Ramah. And he also said that there should be nice things, nice bigadim, which could mean curtains and carpets and things. Haga, the Ramah adds, V'nogim shekol ish gadol katan osin lo ner, gam ner neshamai laviv limo shemetu. That you light a candle for each person. So once you hear that, people alive and people dead, then you realize that this idea of lighting candles is not simply functional. You should have light, but it's also symbolic. V'chei nachon. We're skipping a little bit in the Ramah, v'yesh omrim. Sheyesh latziah ha-shulchanot b'yom kippur kamo b'shabbat. That means you should set the table. You shouldn't just have a table. You should have a tablecloth. You should have whatever way you normally would set a table for Shabbat. You should do that Yom Kippur as well, even though you don't eat. V'chei nogin, and that is the minhag, tells us the Ramah. Yesh hakatvu, there are those who've written, shenogu luvosh bigadim levanim nikim b'yom kippur. Some say that there is an idea of wearing white, clean clothing on Yom Kippur, as opposed, I'll say it right now, if it were really a day of mourning, then one would wear sackcloth or something like that. But says, no, it should be white, clean clothing. And then it gives us an association, which is really what I'm going to be talking about today, Dugmat Malachei HaSharet. So that the symbol that we wish to evoke is a symbol of the angels. V'chei nogin levo shakitul, shehu levan v'ki. And therefore, the way that we apply this custom is many people wear a kittel, which is levan naki, which is what it just said to do. But then it adds another association, gamu begin meitim. And additionally, the idea of a kittel is also something which is clothing, which is like the clothing that somebody is buried in, and therefore that should crush the spirit and help somebody focus on the seriousness of the day. So you realize then within two lines, it sounds like the Ramah gave us two different reasons. Not sounds. One is to be like the angels, and the other is to remind us of a day of death. The Ramah in the Darkei Moshe, which is his commentary to the Torah, in source number 3 writes, of Mordechai, de Yoma, so it tells us, the Mordechai tells us that the custom is to wear something clean and in order to look like the angels. He goes, and therefore that sounds to be that's what the kist. And he makes reference to something written in Daniel, which I skipped in source number 2. And he says that it's a ish echad lavush badim. Uvago Mamoniot, who by the way is very closely related to the Mordechai, Katav de Maharam, who is related to both, Hayogilovosh Sarginet, and I have no idea what that is, as far as I know, it's a kittel biyomtov, Yishainlo Lachlif Bigadav Biyomtov, Uadin Bishabat, Vegam Tamaki Biyomtov, Bene Adam Smechim, Lachim Blofim Lovshim Sarginet. And again, I have no idea what it is. Shahu Begin Matim, Viskru Yom Amitav, Loit Gau Adkan Lashano. So you see that in the school of the Marami Rutenberg, the larger school, the Mordechai and the Gotma Maniot, we see both of these reasons are brought, and the Ramah bringing down customs from Ashkenaz brings them both. The Mate Ephraim, which is a wonderful source to find customs of Ashkenazim, he adds a little bit of flavor, and he says, Acher kach, after one has the Suda Mafseket, Hochim lebeit haKnesset, you go shul, v'nogim levo shakitul, babayit, So he specifically says you put it on at home. V'leilech lebeit haKnesset k'dei shegam b'derech hilchu lo yazuz mezichrono shehu oleich lekabel k'dushat hayom be'ema. That as the person is walking through the streets wearing the kittel, he'll remember who he is and where he's going and what he's facing, and therefore it adds a little bit to the experience. The Mishneh Berurah codifies, if that's the right word, v'nogin shegam hanashim lovshim bigadim levanim v'nikiyim lichvod hayom. That women also wear things which are white and clean and so on, but they don't wear jewelry as if it were Shabbat or Chag, but they don't actually wear a kittel, but they do have the custom of wearing white clothing. Moving slightly laterally, in source number 6, the Rush tells us, Va'idna, and what he's talking about is the minhag of going to mikvah, which is not the same thing as wearing a kittel. Va'idna ein lenu tarot v'kevan she'ein ba'alei kerin tov lin kol ha'shana kula gam ein chova l'tvila. V'zu ein levarei chaleh. Ela she'nagu olam l'taher atzman b'keri l'tvilat yom ha'kippurim. V'samchu amidrash tanchum b'parshat v'etchanan b'yom ha'kippurim she'im nekiyim kamalchei asharet. So that was a really interesting segue of how he got to the same place. And the place that he got to is that you should be clean like angels, but it wasn't the same reference that we had previously. Rather, what he got into something which is a little bit technical, but let me explain it, because the context may not make as much sense to us. Women are obligated to go a mikveh when there is a change from tum'ah to tahara, and they would make a bracha when they would go, and that would be an obligatory going to the mikveh. Men are not obligated to go to the mikveh. There was a takana of Ezra that if a man is a balkeri, he would go to the mikveh. We don't hold that way, which means that gezerah of Ezra doesn't exist. There are a lot of people, chassidim, who do that, but nonetheless, that is not the custom. Now I'll pause a second to explain the background. There was a discussion, what happens if somebody was born Jewish and raised Jewish and at one point left Judaism? And I'm not talking about today, I'm talking in the Middle Ages. They leave Judaism and let's say for argument's sake they convert to another religion. And then one day they decide that they're going to re-enter the Jewish community. Now, all of us know that there's a basic teaching. If you're Yisrael, afal pi shechata Yisrael hu. A Jew is a Jew is a Jew. Which means, let's just say that till the age of 20, this person was Jewish, and then he converts to Christianity at the age of 21, and then at 30, he returns to Judaism. So when he gets to Beit in Shamala, and God asks him, you know, what about all those Shabbatot you didn't keep between 21 and 30? And he'll say, yeah, but I kept Sunday. So do you think that that's going to work well with the Beit in Shamala? Or what if God says, you know, what about all the non-kosher food that you ate? And he says, yeah, but, you know, I didn't eat fish on Friday, or whatever the case may be. So do you think that's going to impress the Beit in Shamala? So when we say Yisrael, afal pi shechata Yisrael hu, that means that you have responsibility for every single sin that you've done, and you can't say to God, well, excuse me, I opted out. There is no opting out. Nonetheless, what happens when you choose to opt back in? There were those in the Middle Ages who did obligate the person to stand in front of a Beit Din and accept the mitzvot, and they also expected the person to go to mikvah. Essentially, a quasi-gerut, a quasi-conversion, as if to say that you've left the Jewish community, now you need this passage back in. And by the way, I think at least on an emotional or perhaps on a psychological level, that could be really intriguing, because whenever there are rites of passage, it's something which is meaningful, which means how does the person know that they've gone through this change has taken place? So when you create some kind of a ritual, then it becomes official. So that's what happened. Now, with the same sensibility in mind, realize that there were those who argued, and this goes back a little bit earlier, to the time of the Gaonim, there were those who argued that as we change from sinner to repentant, or Baal Tshuva, an Erev Yom Kippur, we should go to mikvah, and not just go to mikvah, you should make a bracha. This is an obligatory going to the mikvah. And that is what was being argued against over here. Now I'll go back and read the source again and read the Rush. That's what the Rush says I don't agree with. But there are those who said that, no, you go to mikvah because you're having this change taking place. What's the change? Yesterday you weren't sufficiently religious, and today you are, and therefore we need this ritual, the rite of passage. Reading the Rush again, va'idna, we ain't lenu tarot. We don't have tumah and tahara, so we don't have to pay attention to this. There's no obligation, even though there's a custom for even men to go to mikvah, and women, by the way, as well, there was a custom on Erev Yom Kippur. And you don't make a bracha on this. Nonetheless, now he takes it right into the world of tumah and tahara, because he uses the word keri. I'm telling you again, that's not the whole story here. There are those who saw this as not from Kerry, but from sin. Letfilat Yom Kippurim. But he's taking this straight in terms of the roots of Tum and Tahara. V'samcho amidrash tanchuma, but they based it, this idea on this midrash, which says, V'yom HaKippurim Shem Nikiyim K'malchei HaSharet. So therefore, he's looking at people being as pure as the Malchei HaSharet, he's looking at it in terms of Tahara. Although that may be very funny, because I wouldn't say that malachim are tahor, and I wouldn't say that they're tameh. They're malachim. Malachim are completely different. Why are we even looking at this comparison here with malachim? But it's interesting because the Rosh took it there as well. The Gra in source 7 also dealing with this same obligation of going to mikvah vein tzarich ki tamat tefila pi midrash anal she yisro nikim kamalchei sharet kamat shekad rosh kanal the ikur perish nikim mikol chet. So now when I told you that what the Rush was explaining was not the universal explanation, if you look at the way the Gra explains it, he goes, excuse me, the idea of being nikiim, the idea of being purified, it means purified from sin and not purified from tum'ah. And he tells us to look at the Pirkei d'Elezer, which we will, but we will wait a little bit before we get there. The Mordechai as well says, Nahagu prushim l'tvol erev Yom Kippurim, damrinim b'fashet chanan b'fashet tanchuma, tov ad avel b'yom kippurim, shehim nekiyim kamei chasharet omer otam b'farhesi, v'lavshim nami b'dim nekiyim mehay tama. And again, it is not a question of tum'ah, but rather it is a question of being sinless. And again, I want to pause a second. What intrigues me, I'm going to focus on, so I make sure I don't lose you. What intrigues me is the comparison with the angels. Why in the world, what in the world are the angels doing here? And angels show up a little bit more than they should. I can't give you a statistic analysis of when angels should be in a discussion and when they shouldn't be in a discussion, but they're here a little bit too much. And it's why they are here, which is what I'm going to try to explain. So therefore, again, just to be really clear on this, when the Rush is trying to figure out why do people go to mikvah, he's being very, very legalistic. Who goes to mikvah? Somebody who's tummy, but we don't have tumantara for men today. There's no application of it, so men don't need to go to mikvah. End of discussion. That's it. But the Vilna Gaon told us, and again, based on others, on earlier sources, no, this is not something which is based on Tumah and Tahara. It's based upon something else, and that is spiritual purity, which is going to be a different type of Tahara. Not a Tahara as opposed to Tumah in terms of all the laws of Tumah that I touched something or came in contact or a bodily function, but rather the stain of sin. And therefore, the comparison with the Malchei HaSharet doesn't work when you compare it to the technical Tum'ah, but it does work when you compare it to a person who's now sinless. Which means the idea of Tum'ah and Tahara have nothing to do with angels. The idea of being sinful or sinless, that does have to do with angels. Because I can just, again, as a metaphor say, oh, the person is as sinless as an angel, but they're angelic. But the angelic in this discussion means something completely different. So keeping this in mind, let's focus a little bit more on angels. So a couple of things. One, source number 9, Avot Rabbi Natan, this is Nuschabet. It says there that a Navi could be called a couple of different things. Asara Shemot Nekra Navi, Eved, Malach, Shaliach. But I want to focus on two of them, a Malach and a Shaliach. Sometimes in Tanakh, somebody who is a Shliach is called a Malach, and sometimes somebody who is a Malach is called a Shliach. And obviously there's an interrelationship between the two. Ultimately, what is a Shliach? A Shliach is somebody who is sent on a mission. Ultimately, what's a Malach? A Malach is something that is sent on a mission. Now, this idea of being a Shliach of God is a theme which Rabbi Soloveitchik, actually, the concept of shlichut is something which he was very, very fond of. And he gave a number of different talks on the concept of shlichut. I am not going to do a full treatment of what he did with this, but maybe we'll have enough time to do a little bit of a treatment of this, because I believe that there are issues of this shlichut in terms of our obligation or our mission, which is absolutely what Chazal are trying to get to. But as I said, give me a couple of minutes and we'll see how we get there. And by the way, one other thing about a Navi, sometimes called a Malach and sometimes called a Shaliach, one of the themes of Yom Kippur is a Navi who was sent on a mission, right? He was a Shliach, and he refused to do his Shlichut. And that's also something which I believe is absolutely connected to the rest of this, that Yonah refused to do his Shlichut. At the end of the day, God says, listen, if I hired you as a Shaliach, you know, this is an offer that you can't refuse. You're going to end up doing this. You really have no choice about this. And that's part of the implication of being on a shlichut from God, right? Or for some of you, Yonah doesn't work. Maybe the Blues Brothers works instead, being on a mission from God. Nonetheless, this is absolutely connected. I do want to skip a little bit ahead, and then we're going to come right back. I quoted one thing from Avot Rabbi Natan. I want to bring in a second reference, and that is in source number 20, the very beginning, in the normative Nuscha Aleph. Moshe Nitkadesh Banan V'Kibel Torah MiSinai. I'm a Rabbi Natan. Which Rabbi Natan? The one who's called Avot Rabbi Natan. That Natan. B'bnei Ma Nitakev Moshe Kol Shishat Yamim V'lo Sharat Alav Dibur. Why was it stalled for 6 days? Bishvil shimarek mikol achila v'shtia. In order for Moshe to ascend to heaven, first he needed to become purged of all of the food and the drink within him, shebe'av, that were in his person, ad sha'ash nitkadesh v'yekamach ha'asharet, in order for him to become sanctified, to become like one of the angels. So that's also fascinating, that in order for Moshe to become the shliach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a shliach, again, it's a very big, good question. When Moshe goes to get the luchot, who was he being a shliach for? Was he being a shliach for God to bring it down to the Jews? Or was he being a shliach from the Jews to bring it from God? Which means, what was his role over here? If you want to get overly technical, then you can start looking at the laws of Kedushin, when you can say, Harei Mekudesh Li, and give the thing to a shliach. So who was Moshe a shliach for? Was he a shliach for the chassan or for the kala? Was he a shliach for Kodesh Baruch Hu? Was he a shliach for Am Yisrael? Now this source in Avot Rabbi Natan, without saying anything, actually leads us to the feeling that he was actually a shliach for Kodesh Baruch Hu. Why would I say that? Because he needs to become like a malach. A malach is a shliach for Kodesh Baruch Hu. Aside from the normative problem that we have, and that is shliach sha'adam kamoso, you need to be on the same kind of stature. So in that case, no one could be a shliach for Kodesh Baruch Hu, because by definition that is absurd. Nonetheless, it sounds like Moshe needs to become like one of the angels. Now, I'm going to say it again. The tension with the angels is going to be an issue which I think exists out of proportion when it comes to, shall we say, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, although I'll be unfair and I'm going to stretch it a little bit more, because when I talk about Rosh Hashanah, I feel completely comfortable to speak about creation. Because by creation we know that, and I didn't even bring it here, that the Midrash brings that the angels, various Midrashim, the angels complain to Kadosh Baruch Hu, like, why are you doing? Why are you creating man? Look at man. Man is so incapable. What are you doing? But that idea that the angels are the ones who complain to God, as it were, you know, what do you need these people for, is actually because, and I want to say this very clearly, it's actually because that when mankind appears, the angels become less important. Because I'm going to say it again, ultimately, we all have a shlichut, which means we are the ones who are supposed to be fulfilling God's will in this world. And if we do this, the angels become expendable. And therefore, whenever man is supposed to do something incredible, angels come in over there to start questioning the appropriateness of this. And we're going to see some of these things. And I'm just telling you, that's how I'm reading the background of all of this. Although, again, maybe I'm being a little bit unfair, but not terribly unfair. Source number 11. Midik Amar Bishat Halel, Michlal Rosh Hashanah Leika Halel. So again, we jumped in the middle of the Gemara. This is actually in a couple places, but we're citing it from Rosh Hashanah. My time, Amar Rabbi Abahu. Amru Malchi Asharait Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Bnei Ma'en Yusol Amar Shira Lefanecha B'Rosh Hashanah V'Yom HaKippurim. The angels say to God, what? Why don't the Jews say Hallel in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? Now, where is this question coming from? I don't want to read God's answer yet. Where is the question coming from? So if you look at source number 12, he tells you exactly where it's coming from, but I'll speak it out. What he's saying is that the angels know every year how this works out, which means this trial takes place and the Jews get spared every single year. So they're saying, you know, this is a, you know, the jury's been bribed. The judge, you know, is on the take. You know, what's... I mean, doesn't Am Yisrael know how this is going to work out at the end? Don't they know that this is a time for celebration? Why they should be saying Hallel. But by the way, this is fascinating. It's saying if we knew down here on earth what is known up in heaven, then we would be saying Hallel every Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Now, okay, that's the angels giving us their inside information. Kadosh Baruch, on the other hand, says, no. On the other, there is another hand on all of this. Amr Lahem, Efshar Melech Yoshev Akise Din Vesifre Chaim Vesifre Meitim Petuchim Lefanov Vyisrael Amr Mshira? He goes, nonetheless, there's a Melech who's sitting on a throne of judgment, and the books of the living and the books of the dead are opened in front of him. And they're going to say Shira. Now, I do want to say something important about the books of the living and the dead. This is not necessarily who will live and who will die. I've seen a number of commentaries who say this, including Rabbi Soloveitchik said this in a shir, apparently in 1968. He says, rather, the understanding is that every single year, God judges the living and God judges the dead. Now, if you're going to ask why judge the dead, they haven't done anything recently. That's true. But what have the dead done that has impacted the world in the past year? That means every single year the dead are judged for the impact that they've had. And it could be that somebody had more impact one year than the other and positive one year, and they haven't been alive for years. But this concept itself is an enormous concept. I mean, just think for a moment how many people today all over the world opened up a Chumash and looked at Rashi, opened up a Gemara and looked at Rashi. Every single time somebody learns Rashi, Rashi's impact on this world changes and elevates, which means the impact that Rashi has on this world is unbelievable, but it's unbelievable in terms of every year he's judged and every year his soul is elevated. So therefore, the idea of this fear in heaven, because God says, listen, there's fear to see what people did. Nonetheless, the angels are saying, no, please, we know how this works out. But this may be one of the, I would say, really incredible implications of free will. That means that we have the ability of changing the past of somebody who has not been alive for years by taking something from that person and having it impact the world this at this point in a positive way, because that completely changes the past. And if no one, if we've never imagined how Geula can ever take place, if we have the ability of changing past generations, that means that we have the ability or incredible ability of changing a reality, I think, far more than we've ever imagined. Because sometimes we look at ourselves as being very, very limited in how much can I do? What kind of difference can I make? Although what we're seeing over here is an ability of changing the books of all of those dead. And I think that that is absolutely a incredible concept. I think every time I find some obscure source from somebody who perhaps has not been... quoted or cited or learned in a very long time, then I get a special kind of pleasure from this, because here in a sense, it's a mace mitzvah, as it were. It's taking something and elevating something which really is special. Now that's the understanding of that Gemara. Moving on a little bit, I think we have something which echoes this. And this is the Yerushalmi in 13. This is the famous Yerushalmi with the Amar Rav Simon. Tzadikim v'gomer. Rav Chama, Rav Chanina, Rav Hoshaya, Chad Amar, Ezo Uma Komazot, B'no Hag Sheba Olam, the way the world normally works, Adam Yodea Sheesh Lo Din, Love Shcharim, Umetatev Shcharim, Magadel Zekno. Normally a person knows that he's going to be judged, so what does he do? He puts on dark clothing. I mean, I've heard arguments between various people involved in outreach, who's created more balei tshuva than the next. The truth is the Israeli justice system has put more yarmulkes on people than anyone else. And almost anybody who shows up for court, they put a yarmulke on their head. So the secular Israeli judges, they create the most balei tshuva in the world. But it says the norm, he goes, that's exactly the point. The normative behavior when someone's going to be judged is that there's going to be a great deal of angst and a great deal of concern. And it says, on the other hand, what do the Jews do? Avol Yisrael ain't okay. El lov shim levanim. By the way, this goes back to wearing white. They wear something white, umetatef levanim, and they wrap themselves in white, umagalchim zikanam, and they come in well groomed, va'ochlim v'shotim u'smechim. Obviously, is more appropriate for Rosh Hashanah, but even Yom Kippur, this could really be an expression of Erev Yom Kippur, that there is really the meal would have joy. Why? Yodim Shakadosh Baruch Hu Oselehem Nisim, and I love that word Nisim in this, because they know that God does the miraculous. V'chrona Omer Ezu Uma Kamozot B'nog Shema Shiltono Omer Hadin Hayom, and it continues and says, no, there's another interpretation. Normally, it's the judge or the justice system who makes the date and says when the case will be heard. V'halistim, but the criminals Omer L'machar Hadin L'mishamim. Which means, if the justice says Adin Hayom and the listim say tomorrow, who do you listen to? Lo l'shilton? You don't listen to the judges? Aval Kodesh Baruch Hu Eino Kein. Amru Beitin Hayom Rosh Hashanah Kodesh Baruch Hu Omer L'malchi Asheret Heimidu Bima Ya'amidu Sanigorin Yamdu Kategorin Sha'amru Bini Hayom Rosh Hashanah Nimlechu Beitin Labra L'machar Kodesh Baruch Hu Omer L'malchi Asheret Havir Bima Yavru Sanigorin, and so on. Which means if Am Yisrael decides today, it's today. And if Am Yisrael decides it's tomorrow, then we do it tomorrow. Am Yisrael decides. This is more clearly expressed in the Midrash on Parashat Bo. Davar Achar Achodesh Zelachem Amru Malchei Asheret. And again, I want to note that in both the Rishalmi and over here as well, the Malchei Asheret are part of the story. Amru Lefnei Kodesh Baruch Hu Ribono Olam Eimatay Ata Oseh Ata Moadot, one of the holidays. And what's the answer? I'm skipping a little bit. Amar Lahem, Aniva Atem, Maskima Mashi Yisrael, Gomru Mabrim Et Hashana. Both of us will wait to see what Am Yisrael has to say, because essentially Am Yisrael is in charge. So I'm going to say it again. These various sources about the celebratory aspect of the holidays of Rosh Hashanah, the idea of dressing in white, the idea, the tension there where the angels are questioning us, and again, I want to stress that the angels are asking, you know, why aren't we like this, and why is God giving up on his, I don't want to say independence, why is God sharing anything and letting us make these decisions? I'm going to say it one more time. I think that these various questions are all interrelated, and they're getting at something which we really need to understand regarding Rosh Hashanah and Aseret Yemei Teshuva, and especially Yom Kippur. In Devarim, we have another application of this. It has to do with another famous custom on Yom Kippur. Davar Acher, Shema Yisroel Rabbanan Amrim B'Shasha Ala Moshe L'Marom, Shema L'Malchei Asheret Shoyo Omrim L'Kadosh Baruch Hu, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchut Olam Ve'ed, Vorido Tali Yisrael. That, you know, if you look in the Chumash, it says Shema Yisrael. We have a custom saying Baruch Shem. Now, there are different resolutions in the Gemara where the Baruch Shem came from. This one says that Moshe overheard the Malchei Hasharet saying it, and he took it down. V'loma Ein Yisrael Omrim Ato B'Farhesya. Okay. By the way, it's stolen property. That itself is a problem. Why don't we say it publicly? Amar Ravasi, l'mad davadom l'achas shaganav kozmin mitoch paltin shemelach nanala leishto v'amr lo altit kashtiba befarhesya. You stole jewelry from the palace and you give it to your wife. You say, listen, wear it, but don't wear it publicly. You get taught. Ela betoch beitech, only wear it at home. Aval, and this is what we need to see. B'yom HaKippurim, Shehim nikiyim kemalchei asharet, heinam rimoto befarhesya, baruch shem kavod malchut olam ve'ed. And that I don't want, you know, to escape from us. Because that, again, is this idea of somehow man being like angels. And that was really where we started today. We dress in white to be like angels. We really need the insight that the angels had. What it is about the angels, what is this whole thing about going to mikveh? Not to get rid of tum'ah, but to get rid of sin in order to be nikiyim like angels. And again, what is this, I don't want to say obsession, but what is this place that the angels have to do with all of this? So let's continue a little bit more. There's an interesting description in the Gemara in Brachot, which is talking about the world to come. Margli b'pomi d'Rav, Rav was fond of saying, lo kol olam hazeh olam haba. You know, olam haba is not going to be what you think it is. Not like this world. Olam haba, ein bo lo achila, v'lo shtia, v'lo piria v'rivya, v'lo masav u'matan, v'lo kin'a, v'lo sin'a, v'lo tacharut, ela tzadikim yoshvim ba'atarotein, b'roshem v'nenim miziv v'shchina. What happens? There's no eating and there's no drinking and there's no sexual relations, there's no business and there's no jealousy and there's no hatred and there's no competition. Rather, righteous people sitting with crowns on their heads enjoying the proximity to the Shekhinah. Now that description is very interesting, but I want to note what I think is a possible comparison in case you didn't get it. Essentially, what it's describing is angelic existence. It's saying that Olam Abal, and as Rav is describing it, is very much like angels, and here is this other tension between angels and man. I mentioned before what Rabbi Natan taught, that Moshe goes up and he has to become like an angel in order to bring the Torah down from heaven. Source 17, Amar Vishu ben Levi, B'shosha Allah Moshe l'marom, Amru Machlei Asherai l'pinei Kadosh Baruch Hu, Rebonu Shel Olam, Mali Ludi Shah Beinenu. How could a human being, somebody who's born from flesh and blood, be among us? Amalam the Kabel Taraba. Amalaf Chemda Gnuza Shegnuza Lach Tshamayot Veshivim Va'arba Darot Kodem Shenivra Olam. Something, a precious treasure which has been hidden away for 974 generations before the world was created. Atam Vakeshlo LaBasav Adam. You want to give it to man of flesh and blood? Manosh Ki Tizkirenu Ven Adam Ki Tifkedenu. Man is so fragile, not just physically, spiritually. Hashem Adonai Ma'adir Shemcha B'chol Ha'aretz Asher Tenahutcha Al HaShamayim. Right? This is something which really should belong to heaven. It should not belong to man. Amar Lo Kadosh Baruch Hu L'Moshe Hechzir Lem Tshuva. Says, Moshe, no, give him an answer. Amar Lefer Rabbeinu Shel Olam Et Yareini Shema Yisrafuni Behevel Sfihem. He goes, I'm afraid they're going to burn me. Amar Lo Hechoz B'Kisei Kvodi. Now, that is also quite interesting, what's going on here, but we're not going to give this proper attention that it deserves, but we'll do this rather quickly. He says, hold on to the Kisei HaKavod, v'chazor lam tshuva, and respond. Shenemar, as it says, ma'ches p'nei kisei, parshez alav anano. And we'll skip a little bit. Omar lefanav, ribono sholam, Torah shatay noten li, makativ ba. So he says, what does it say inside it? Anochi Hashem alokecha, shel tzitich ha'meirat tzrayim. I'm God who took you out of Egypt. Amar Lahem, Moshe turns to the angels. L'Mitzrayim, you're out of Tem. Were you in Egypt? L'Paro, Hishtab, out of Tem. Were you enslaved? Torah L'mat Elohim. What does it have to do with you? Shuv Maktiv. What else does it say? Lo Yelach Elohim Achirim. You shouldn't have other gods. Ben Agoyim Ateshurim. Are you impacted by the other nations that you live among them? Sha'ovdim Avodah Zarah, that worship idolatry, that have an impact on you? Shuv Maktiv. What else does it say? Zochor Yom HaShabbat Lakacho. Klum Atem Osim Lacha. Do you guys even work? She'atem Tzrichim Shvut. You need to rest? Shuv Maktiv. But what else does it say? Lo Tisa. Don't take God's name in vain. Masa U'matan Yesh Baneichem. Do you guys work? Shuv Maktiv Ba. Kaveda Tavich Vatimecha. Avaim yesh lachem. Do you have parents? Shuv maktiv. What else are they? Lo tirtzach, lo tinnof, lo tinnof. Kin ayesh bachem? Do you guys have jealousy? Yitzahara yesh b'neichem? Miyad hodu lo l'kadosh baruch hu shenemar Hashem Adoneinu ma'adir shumcha. Now again, the main thing I really wanted you to notice is the comparison, again, angels object to man having a role. Now, this is an important role because this is Moshe bringing the Torah down, Moshe acting as a shliach and bringing it down, giving the Torah to Am Yisrael, where they're now going to have their shlichut, which is essentially to be a mamlechet kohanim v'goy kadosh. And the angels say, you know, ma pitom, why? You know, shouldn't we, really, we be the ones? And Moshe responds to them that all these qualities that you have, which is essentially what Rav described, almost word for word, again, a little different, as far as what's awaiting in the world to come, when we perhaps become far more angelic. The Kli Yakar has a very nice drasha about this, specifically about when the curtain separating between the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kodeshim. Again, he can only go in what Am Yisrael are like angels, which means the clothing that the Kohen Gadol wears is very much angelic clothing, dressed in white and so on, which, by the way, is another reference. It's almost as if to say that every single one of us on Yom Kippur should be dressing as if we are the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Now, I know that sounds a little bit strange, but give me a little bit of time. I'm going to try to explain that as well. What he's saying, but he's about to say, as I said, something which is really fascinating, that the Kohen Gadol can go in because all of Am Yisrael Olam Malchei Asharet Shenikru Kruvim Ki Be'etzam Yom Ahu HaChomer Mu'na U'Ki'ilu Einenu V'lo Nishar Bo Ki'im HaKoach HaSichli HaMachshavi Shenikru Ma'aseh Choshev. That man becomes separated on Yom Kippur from the physical, and we become much more intellectual beings. Al-Kain, Ma'aseh Choshev, remember? Al-Kain haya ha-parochet ahu Ma'aseh Choshev. And therefore, the parochet, which separates you in the holy and holies, is called Ma'aseh Choshev, Kruvim. It has embedded on it, or embroidered on it, Kruvim, like angels. Kidei sha'ra b'parochet zeh yaskil v'yavin sha'in l'rishut l'kanei shama ki'im b'zman shehu domel l'kruvim ma'aseh choshev. The Kohen Gadol needs to be v'chein nikra ha'malach levush abadim. And the angel is also called levush abadim. Kiderech Kohen Gadol b'yom ha'kivim shehu levush abadim u'bigdei lavan. So the reason why I love this, because it is just so much sharper in terms of what I've been trying to get to. On Yom Kippur, all of us need to be angelic. On Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol needs to be angelic. The Kohen Gadol needs to dress in a way that looks like an angel and represent a people that are angelic. And that's what could take us. But again, we realize something. And that is, we're not angelic. We're very, very human. We do have a Yetzer Hara. We do have Kinah and Sinah and so on, which means that there is a basic problem. But it's fascinating that on Yom Kippur, we are trying to dress in a way, prepare in a certain way, have a certain type of attitude, stay away from certain things in order to be as if we are malachim. And I'm going to go back and say it one more time. Nope. So what is a malach? Malach ultimately is a shliach. So what is a malach? It's a shliach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what are we on Yom Kippurim? We become the shlichim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But of course the reality is that ever since Moshe brought the Torah down from heaven and he had to be like an angel to go and fight with the angels to bring it down, parallel to the fight with the angels to create man in the first place, then he also needed to be like a Kohen or like a Kohen Gadol, as it were. In fact, the Gemara we'll see in a second, the Gemara in Nedarim, but first we'll start with the Gemara in Yoma, because in Yom Kippur we like to focus on Yoma. They would call in the Kohen Gadol. Now, this is the time that the Kohen Gadol was actually a bought position, which was quite problematic. Va'omrulo, the end of the first line in Source 21, Va'omrulo, there's a mission in Yoma, Ishi Kohen Gadol, sir. Anu shluchei beitin, vata shluchei, shluchinu ushluchei beitin. We are emissaries of the court, and you are our emissaries and also emissary of the beitin. Mashbiyim anu alecha b'misha shiken shmo b'bayit hazeh. We make you swear by the presence of he who dwells in this house, shelo tishna devar mikol ma she'amru lach, that you don't change anything. And the problem was they suspected of being a Sadduki. Hu parish b'bochei v'hein parishim b'bochim. The Gemara in Nedarim, however, asks, Ibailahu, Hani Kohane, these Kohanim, Shluchei Didon Havu, Are they our shlichim? Are they our emissaries? O shlichei d'shamaya? Or are they shlichim of heaven, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Now, I asked that question before about Moshe Rabbeinu, but now you realize, hopefully along the way, that Moshe was acting like a Kohen, and now the question becomes more focused. A Kohen, what is his job? Is his job to be a shliach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or is his job to be a shliach of Klal Yisrael? Now, at the end of the day, I'm going to skip a whole bunch of commentaries, and I want to focus instead just on one, on Source 22, the Yad David. If you don't know who he is, Rabbi Yosef David Zinsheim, if you've never heard of him, he was the head of Napoleon's Sanhedrin. The reason why Napoleon chose him is because he happened to have been the biggest Talmud Chacham around, and he actually resolves this by saying, "It's both; they're both true." V'shaper amur al tashulchenu v'nihida ipshitei ibaya dakani shluchi dedan nami ninhu. That really the question is, really the answer is that the Kohen is a shliach of Am Yisrael, but is also a shliach of Kadosh Baruch Hu. He's a shliach, as it were, on both sides. So, let me just pause this part, and I want to say one or two things. Two things, maybe. Ultimately, I hope the message that we've been getting is that what all of us are all year round, ever since the Torah was brought down, all of us are Kohanim. We are Mamlechet Kohanim V'goy Kadosh. The reason this is the case is because we have the Torah. The question is, if all year round we've been living up to our responsibility. And in Yom Kippur, when we need to face the question, have we been proper emissaries, shlichim, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we then go into an extreme shliach mode, at least in terms of a lot of the outward ways, and the halacha gives us some of this, and the minhag gives us other. The halacha telling us, okay, don't eat, don't drink, don't have sexual relations, and then continuing, dress in white, you know, prepare yourself, go to mikvah, purge yourself of sins, and be like a malach as much as you can. Why? Because a malach is a shliach, which means what we need to do is to hyper-focus on our shlichut. Are we doing our shlichut? Now, I told you from the beginning that this was and is a topic which Rav Soloveitchik enjoyed and brought up in various different ways. One of the things, you know, maybe that we also just in passing need to note is that none of us may actually know what our particular shlichut is. You know, one thing about the angels is that no two different angels have the same shlichut. And maybe that's the same for us. Maybe each one of us has a unique role which exists in this earth. When Rav Soloveitchik mentioned this, he spoke about himself as well. Maybe my shlichut is not what you think it was. Maybe it was doing some random good deed at some point. He actually mentioned a source in the Yerushalmi, which at first glance is a little surprising. Source 28, and it's mentioned a little bit differently in the Bavli. Imosh Rabbi Tarfon Yerv Latayel Tochat Sera B'Shabbat. She once went for a walk on Shabbat. V'alach Rabbi Tarfon Niach Shtei Yadav Tachet Parsuteha V'itamalechet Ala Ad Shegia L'mitata. Her shoe apparently broke, and he put his hands down so she can walk on his hands and not have to walk in a place that was a little bit muddy. Pamachad Chalav V'nichnasu Chachamim V'vakro. Rabbi Tarfon once got sick, and the rabbis came to visit him. Amralahem hitpalu al Tarfon benish unoig bi kavod yoter midai, and she says, "Pray for my son Tarfon because he treats me with too much respect. He does more than he's obligated to do." Amrula ma'avad lech, and they ask, "What did he do?" And she tells the story. But tenet alone uvda, she tells over what happened. Amrula filu osakein elef alafim adain lechatzi kavod shematar lo igia. Even if he did 1,000 times of that, he still didn't do, you know, what the Torah obligates. Now, there are those who've asked on this Gemara, when somebody is very ill, let's imagine Rabbi Tarfon is very ill, and someplace between this world and the next, and you pray for them, why would the Chachamim say, "Oh no, this guy did not do his obligations"? It doesn't make sense. They should say, "Oh, he's such a tzaddik, because he's such a tzaddik, God save him, we need tzaddikim like this." So if Soloveitchik suggested is that what his mother was saying is that his role in this world was to honor me, and he's honored me beyond what his obligation is, and the implication then is that he has fulfilled his shlichut. If he's fulfilled his shlichut, then his soul can be returned to heaven. And therefore, the Chacham say, no, even half of what he has to do, he hasn't done yet, essentially arguing, we still need Rabbi Tarfon down here on earth. Which, again, is a brilliant insight into the Gemara, but it goes into this way that he saw the world in terms of this concept of shlichut, in terms of obligation, of mission. So I want to add something from the Vilna Gaon, which I know I had in my source sheets a couple of weeks ago. I just don't remember if I ever got to it or not. So either way, I'm quoting it. This is in verse 29. It's in the Vilna Gaon's commentary to the Mishnah. So he writes, Pirisha asur lechavein b'tfila l'tzarech atzmo, achlid palel shiyu kol Yisrael b'tachlid ha-shlemot, v'yonishlam knes Yisrael l'mala. Knes Yisrael l'mala. Avlo l'tzarech atzmo, So, what he says over here is that essentially, every person who says the Amidah should see himself or herself as a Shliach Tzibur. Why? And part of this is technical. Because the Amidah is all said in the plural. None of it is said in the individual. The only thing which is said in the individual is Lokai Netzor. So then help me. So the Vilna Gaon is not saying one can never pray for themselves. It's not what he said. He's really focusing on the Amidah. But every single time we say the Amidah, if you said the words, and any of those words, but you were thinking about yourself when you prayed, then you weren't Yotze, according to the Vilna Gaon, because that's not the words. The words are on the plural. Which means that all of us have to be Shlichim. But he said another thing along the way. He said that my intention should be is to make Knesset Yisrael whole. And that's what I want to explain as we get towards the last part of this year. In source number 30, the Shulchan Aruch, this time Siman Tuf Reish Vav, it's a little bit earlier than where we started before, it says, Averot Shebein Adam L'Chavero, Ein Yom Kippur Mechaper Ad Shif Asenu. That when it comes to Yom Kippur, then Yom Kippur does not help on sins which are interpersonal. I feel like no element of Arim, even if you only bothered somebody verbally. Tzarech lefaiso, you still need to placate them. So you really have to try. So we'll stop there, and I want to go back to where the source for this is. So there's actually two possible sources. First, there's a Mishnah in Baba Kama. It says, if you stole something, return what you stole, einu nimchal, you're not forgiven, ad shivakesh mimenu, till you ask for the person shenemar, v'tarshiv eshed v'gomer. Just like Avimelech had to have Avraham ask for forgiveness, and he actually had to ask Avraham to pray for him. And so on. So it says, ad shivakesh mimenu, you have to, einu nimchal, ad shivakesh mimenu, you have to ask for mechila. The Rambam very much follows this, although he adds one annoying part, and that's in source 32. He writes, "Einu mitkaper lo v'lo nimchal avono ad shivakesh min hanechbal v'yimchol lo." And the person is mochel. You have to ask shivakesh min hanechbal. The Mishnah said, "Ad shivakesh menu." So over here, you see the Rambam is very closely copying what he had in his sources. On the other hand, in the Mishnah, which really the halacha that I read was following, Averot Sheben Adam L'Makom, Yom Kippur Mechaper. Averot Sheben Adam L'Chavero, Ein Yom Kippur Mechaper, Ad Sheyiratze Et Chavero. So what is Ritzuri, as opposed to the way it's said in Baba Kama, or the way the Rambam writes it, Michila, right? Ad Sheyivakesh, Einu Nimchal, Sheyivakesh Menu. You request Michila. Over here, it's Ritzuri. And the Rambam writes as well in source 34, "Mashu chayav lo v'yiratzehu," that it's na'enu nimchal olam ad sheyiten l'chaver mashu chayav. You have to return what you stole v'yiratzehu. So the question is very simple: why all year round I have to return the thing and ask for mechila, but when it comes to Yom Kippur, I have to not just ask for mechila? It's ritzoi. What's the difference between ritzoi versus mechila? That's ultimately the question. One of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, the Ateret Tzvi, writes, Mechilav sheyodeh shelo chatalo kidei sheyelev kol Yisrael shalem echad im chavero. He says in Yom Kippur, the reason we ask everybody for forgiveness is for a whole different reason than you would have thought. It's in order to create unity. Look at Source 36, the Yerushalmi, in Rosh Hashanah. Here it's speaking about how in the world God arranges that the heavens stay together when you have hot planets and cold planets. How do they not collide and completely? L'fiyah rakia shamayim kochavim shel eish. How does this even work? V'hein darim zem zeh ve'inu mazikim lezeh l'fichach. Therefore it says, Oseh shalom birmamav. God makes peace above. Amrav ibun hamalach atzmo. Even angels. Chatzio mayim v'chatzio eish. Because angels also are made out of different things, and they also, they should be falling apart. Amar Reb Levi, in the next line, La'olam leit mazal chami mar dikiyumi, elakulin silken ke'ilin desalken bisumala hafich, which was difficult Aramaic, but I will tell you what it says. It's using, actually, and it's fascinating, the image of the sulam. I assume the only sulam in Tanakh is Yaakov's sulam. And what he says is that every single angel, as it goes up and as it goes down, doesn't look at any other angel. It only looks at itself. It only looks at the rung that it's walking on, which is a very good idea if you don't want to fall down the ladder, right? It's looking straight in front at its own rung and is nothing, not looking at anybody else, which means how is there peace above? How Oseh Shalom Birmamav? How does God do this? Because each angel, as it's climbing up its rung, can only looks at its own rung and doesn't look at anything else, which means it's all self-contained, and being self-contained is actually, and I want to say it a little deeper, and every angel, of course, has its own shlichut, has its own mission. The Pirkei de Lezer, which I told you in the very beginning, I'm going to come back to, he says as follows, Yom Shina Torah Amar Samael, which is Satan, V'nei Kodesh Baruch Hu, Bonu Sholam, Akolu Mot Natate Li Rishut, V'Yisrael Einata Notem Li Rishut. So, Amar Lo, Harei Yesh Lecha Rishut Aleim B'Yom HaKippurim, Im Yesh Tam Chet, V'im Lav, Ein Lecha Aleim Rishut. That you can start up with the Jews if they sin, but if there's no sin, you can't do anything. L'fichach Notnim Lo Shochad B'Yom HaKippurim. That's the Sir Lazazel, that we bribe the... There's a Ramban on this. The Rav is a chapter in Alot Shuva. We bribe the Satan on Yom Kippurim. Shelo levatel korban shel Yisrael shenema gorel achad l'Hashem gorel achad l'Azazel. Gorelo shel Kodesh Baruch Hu korban olav gorelo shel Azazel seir chatat. V'kol avnotem shel Yisrael haya alav shenema v'nasa ha-seir alav kol avnotam. Ra'as Samael shelo nemtza b'yam chet b'Yom Kippurim amar levanav ribono shel olam yesh lecha am echad ba'aretz kamalchei hasharet b'shamayim. And that's important. It's this conclusion that I wanted to get to. The Satan looks at Am Yisrael and says, oh look, Am Yisrael on Yom Kippur are like malachei hasharet. They are like the angels. And because they're like the angels, therefore the Satan has no ability on them, because each angel has to mind his own business and look at their own rung, and they can't look at any other angels. So if Am Yisrael are like angels, that's why the Satan can't touch them at all. Ma malchei hasharet ein lim kfitzin, like their legs don't even bend, that's why we stand up. Kach hem Yisrael omdim al reglein b'yom kippurim. Mal malchei hasharet ein lemachila v'shtia, they don't eat and drink. Kach Yisrael ein lemachila v'shtia b'yom kippurim. Mal malchei hasharet nikiyim mikochet, just like angels don't have any sin. Kach Yisrael nikiyim mikochet b'yom kippurim. Mal malchei hasharet shalom mitaveich b'neihem. There is peace between the various angels. Kachim Yisrael shalom mitaveich pineim b'yom kippurim. Likewise, the Jews have complete peace among them on Yom Kippurim. And that's most likely why the language on Yom Kippur is stronger than the language of all year round. All year round, you ask for mechila. You know what? If a creep robs you and beats you and says, listen, here's the money back, I'm sorry. Okay, I forgive you, but you want nothing to do with that guy again. Ritzoi means that the relationship is going to be like before anything bad ever happens. The mitzvah on Yom Kippur is ritzui of chaverim. It's ritzui to the point that the person now will have an attitude towards you like before you ever did anything wrong to them. That's much stronger. And now if you ask, but why? It's not just because of the individual need for forgiveness. It's about the need to create Am Yisrael as a nation of priests, as a nation who are like angels. And one of the elements that we need is that we can't have any fights with one another. I saw in the Pachad Yitzchak Rav Huttner, he says something which is beautiful, which goes a little bit further along these lines. But he says, you know, there's a mitzvah in the Torah, v'haftarach kamocha. So what's the mitzvah v'haftarach kamocha? That we have to love every Jew as ourselves. He says there's also a mitzvah, therefore, to make ourselves beloved so other Jews can love us. It's not just that other Jews have to put it up with, oh, look, you got a mitzvah to love me, now go ahead and love me. Is that we have to make ourselves lovable. How about that for a challenge of Yom Kippur? Make yourselves lovable that other people will then find it very easy to fulfill the mitzvah after Ech Kamocha. If you want to see him say this inside, it's in the Maimur of Yom Kippur, Lamed. Not just to be ohev, to love others, but to be lovable as well. And that would seem to be part of what Yom Kippur is about. So therefore, what I did from the very beginning is I was talking about this idea of being like angels, and I took it on different levels, but ultimately it is when you go to that Pirkei Elazar, you realize it's a nation of angels. It's a nation which is united, which means the reason why the Satan, as it were, is not able to touch us is because not just as individuals we become people who become purged of sin, but the way that we interact with one another. Which means a lot of the things that I was mentioning along the way, that we dress in white, like angels. We don't eat and don't drink, like angels. You know, as the Pirkei says, we stand up on our feet like angels. We go to the mikveh beforehand, not because of tuma, but in order to be completely purged of sin. The various elements, including asking one another for forgiveness, is in order to create a nation whereby there is unity. And as I said, it's this issue of not just a people who love one another, but a people who make themselves beloved to others as well. Which means this unity of Am Yisrael. And if you really think about it, when we first got to Har Sinai, in the very beginning, about to become this Malachit Kohen and Magai Kadosh to receive the Torah, what was said about us there? We had complete unity. And somewhere along the way, we lost that. On Yom Kippur, when we receive the Luchot HaShniot, that's specifically the time that we need to go back and to fix this as if it's Matan Torah all over again. And we need to get back to this point of Amachad B'Lev Echad. We need to have this point again of this complete unity. Which means, and by the way, just think a little bit again about the trauma of the Chet HaEgel. The Chet HaEgel was a trauma whereby you have people who are doing Avodah Zarah and Gilui Arayot and Shvichut Damim, and then people coming down and killing the people who are guilty of Gilui Arayot and Shvichut Damim and Avodah Zarah. And every man take a sword, go to his brother, kill his brother. What happened to Ish Echad V'Lev Echad? That completely disappeared with the Chet HaEgel. But now we get the second Luchot, and we get forgiveness from the Chet HaEgel. We need to go back to the way we were before the sin. Just like the individual person needs Ritzui to become as beloved to the person before they ever sinned, Am Yisrael needs to become as beloved to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as we were before the sin. And part of doing that is being united as a people. That's part of the issue of the Ritzui of not just individuals. And I know that that halach, you don't have to correct me and tell me, no, but that's said bin adum l'chaveiro. Exactly. And go back and look at the Pirkei Elazar and says, ah, look at these people. There's no kin'an, there's no sin'ah among them. Where did that come from? That came because we loved one another. But where does that come from? That's not yesh mayayin. That doesn't come just magically. That comes because we work on it, not just what we work on loving others, but we also work on ourselves to make ourselves people that other people will actually at least tolerate, but maybe a lot more than that, maybe actually love. And that's the point of Yom Kippur, of getting to be like angels and therefore hyper-focused, that we were put on this earth in order to do a mission. One of the reasons we love one another, because we realize that each one of us have a different shlichut. Every single one of us has something else to accomplish. And the sooner that we realize that somebody else can do something that I can't do, is the sooner that I'm going to love them or love her and respect them, and to say, wow, that person can do something that this world needs so much. And that is really where this love comes from. Because just like angels, everyone has their own. Am Yisrael needs on Yom Kippur to refocus ourselves and to understand that ultimately we are shlichim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and as shlichim from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have a mission to do it. In order to refocus ourselves, we then dress up as the ultimate shlichim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We dress up as the Malachim, who in fact now we realize such a close correlation with the Kohen Gadol. And hopefully as we do this, we become as a people who are united and a people who are beloved and a people who are focused on their mission. And at that point, the angels no longer can argue, why did you create them? And the angels can no longer argue, why in the world did you give them the Torah? And the angels can no longer argue, you know, on all the things that they pick on us, because ultimately, all of the elements that they complain is because we actually are the true malachim, and we're the true shlichim, and we're the ones who have this incredible job that we still need, you know, to accomplish a little bit more. But if we're able to bring about this unity and this and to focus on our mission, then we really, and if we knew that we accomplished this, then maybe we really would be able to say Hallel on Rosh Hashanah and on Yom Kippur. So I wish everybody a Gmar Chatimat.